Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, bravo. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning and to thank you and to congratulate you for coming in. It was a really kind of an eerily beautiful morning, isn't it? And so I'm glad that we didn't miss it, and I'm glad that you could all make it here. And I don't think we've ever made this clear, but just in case, because it is only the middle of March, if Thursday Morning Roundtable were ever canceled, for whatever reason, you would see it scrolled on the bottom of your TV screen for whatever reason, or if you called one of our office number, we would leave a message on the phone. If we couldn't, if we could, we would also get an email to all of you, although we can't do that unless we're in the office, so that could be kind of tricky to get to our listserv. But anyway, good morning. So just a heads up on the next couple of weeks again. Next week we're going to be talking about the Central New York Regional Sustainability Plan. We've talked before about the city's comprehensive plan. We've talked about the county sustainability plan. So I think it will be interesting to see how it fits into this multi-county regional plan for development in Central New York. And then the following week, I mentioned before, we'll be talking with Fred Floss, who's the executive director of the Fiscal Policy Institute, about the minimum wage. And that is really going to tie in to some extent with our broader discussion about the skills gap or the employment skills gaps in Central New York that the Onondaga Citizens League is working on right now. Today, it is my pleasure to welcome our speaker, Ryan McMahon, who is chair of the Onondaga County Legislature. As you know, he's in the beginning of his third year, first term. He's the 15th district, representing the 15th district. That includes parts of the city, as well as the towns of Onondaga and Geddes. You'll remember that he was with us just about 2 years ago, shortly after he took office and was elected. It was unprecedented first-term legislator elected to chair the legislature on his very first day. Prior to that, he was a third district counselor in the city of Syracuse, lifelong city resident, graduate of Lemoyne College. Thank you, Chairman McMahon. Well,
good morning.
Good morning.
And it's great to be here again. It's been a little while, but it's good. I see a lot of familiar faces and one of my former colleagues, Lance Deno. It's always good to see Lance, Assemblymember Christensen. She was a great partner when I first got on the council, working with her, in Albany. And what happens in Albany trickles down to city government, county government, towns and village government. I see Russ Andrews, former legislator, and I see Dave Michael, who used to help us in economic development back in City Hall. So it's there's a lot of knowledge in this room. So hopefully I'll inform you on a couple different things, and then you can ask any question you want of me. I brought my son Jack today as my bodyguard, so please be nice or else my six-year-old's going to have something to say about it. But a lot of interesting times, right? There's been a lot of spirited debate about, different things in our community, stadiums, hotels, nanotechnologies, and just the fact that we're talking about these types of things is a positive thing. There's going to be differences in opinion and debate about what's the right thing to do, who should be sitting where at the table and when, but the fact that we're talking about growth is positive for our city, for our county, for our region. Getting into that, the real crux of everything is finances, right? So I think it's important that we understand the facts as far as the finances from the county side. And I would say I'm uniquely positioned. I'm probably the only person in this county's history that was actually the city council finance chair for a period of time and the chairman of the county legislature, which is responsible for the budget. So I understand both city government finances extremely well, as well as, my main job is to shepherd the budget process year in and year out at the county. And the county legislature has two main functions. As many of you remember, it was a board of supervisors. There wasn't an executive for a long time. So it's a strong form of legislative government. County legislature makes the policy, and we are responsible for the money. The executive is responsible for managing the day-to-day operations and really being a figurehead and advancing their own initiatives, and then trying to get the legislature, which John Mulroy called the ship of fools, on board. So the really looking at our financial situation in Onondaga County, we're very strong. We have the highest credit rating that you can have as a county. We have a healthy fund balance, a healthy reserve. Really what Comptroller DiNapoli wants to see, he wants to see a certain percentage of reserves towards your, compared to your revenues. We do. We have slightly more than that. We try not to go too far above that, because at that point we feel that we're overtaxing and we should probably be investing it back into things. So typically when we have a budget each year, if the executive over the last few years has managed the budget very well, at the end of the year we come in with a surplus. That money goes into fund balance. What we typically like to do at the legislature when we do that is we like to see that invested back into infrastructure. So we typically take whatever's there above our 10% threshold, and typically we'll invest it back into roads, bridges, things that we need to use day to day, things that government really should do. There's lots of things that government does. Some we can debate, some things that maybe government should do, some things government shouldn't do, some things it should do more of. But one of the things that government should do is infrastructure. So that's what we typically like to do. How our budget's made up, very simple. We we run government on sales tax. And I think that's something that not just county government is doing, city government, due to the new sales tax sharing formula, which was a win for the city, a win really for the region. I know that some it was tough because you had towns and villages who are being weaned off and cut off sales tax. So I know that those local governments didn't see it as a win. But from a regional standpoint, you need a healthy city. You need an economic engine in the heart of the county to really succeed and to really compete with other regions. Since then, the city government, I believe when the last year, before the old sales tax formula used to cap the growth the city could receive each year. So even if the sales tax grew at 6%, city revenues can only grow at 2%. I don't pretend to know why that was the old formula, but it wasn't right. If sales tax is growing, the city should grow a sales tax. So really, over the last 4 years, what you've seen is the sales tax in the city of Syracuse grow from about $60 million to $77 million. So it just shows you that what would have been if the county executive didn't take the position she took, if Mayor Minor didn't take a strong position, if people on the county council, myself, Councilor Deno, didn't take the position we did. And more importantly, the people who don't get enough credit for this were really the Republican caucus, the Republican legislators, right? Because they voted unanimously to implement the sales tax sharing formula, yet they didn't represent any parts of the city of Syracuse. So they were actually voting against their own interests, yet they got very little credit. And I think it's easy to give credit to the mayor and the county executive because they're obviously two executives that are very visible, but Jim Reinhardt and Rich Lesniak and these gentlemen who actually were in the legislature at that time, they were the ones who actually voted against their own self-interests. And a lot of them didn't run for re-election again, probably because they wouldn't have won. So it was a key moment in our near recent history. And if that didn't happen, the ideas of a control board wouldn't be talk, it'd be a reality. The fiscal deficit the city would have been essentially $17 million more than what the deficit is structurally today. So in our budget, we've cut property taxes with the sales tax growth. So as sales tax has grown, we've cut back the county property tax levy. The levy is now a little over $140 million. Our Medicaid bill that we get from the state of New York is more than that. Alone. So really our property tax goes to fund Medicaid. The state has been helpful over the last few years where they've capped the growth on Medicaid, which was what is driving counties throughout the state to near insolvency. So that's been huge because at least we know what our number is. We know it's not going to grow every year. So we can do a little bit more long-term planning. But sales tax funds about almost 70% of our local dollars. So when you look at the Sheriff's Department, a budget of $75 million, you look at our DOT, you look at our Economic Development, you look at our Parks Department, you look at everything else that we do in county government with social services, that's really funded through sales tax. So when we look at things from a regional economic basis, that doesn't mean we need to go all in on retail or whatnot. What it does mean is we need to go all in on population growth, population stability, and we also need to go all in on tourism, because every dollar that comes in from outside this community is new money found, and that's what's driving the growth on our revenue side in our government and in the city's government. So that's really what, you know, over the last few years we've tried to structure our economic development strategies around. At the legislature, we have a unique role in economic development because the IDA is actually, the board members are actually my picks, confirmed by the legislature. We're in the city of Syracuse, the mayor picks, and that's that. There's no confirmation from the county council. So we have a unique role to play in setting the policy and then working on economic strategies. And so obviously one of the things that we've had some successes, about a year and a half ago, I was in Arlington, Texas, and everyone probably remembers when we had the Women's Bowling Conference here, and you know, the theme was Hug a Bowler, and so it was very successful. It was a great learning experience. I actually went down with this our Convention and Visitors Bureau, and we talked, we were going for the big conference. We're going for the open conference, which is the men and the women combined, and it's a huge economic impact of $80 million, for a 2 to 3 month period of time. And, one of the things, you learn a lot when you're competing. And, as an elected official, I learned a lot. And you learn a lot about what your region doesn't have and what other regions do have. And we're able to secure that business really because of the experience that they had in Central New York beforehand and the promise that we were going to continue to grow in essentially the hospitality world, because they their experience before with the women's event was good. We barely had enough hotel rooms to meet the demand. Their concern was, if we're bringing in an additional 50,000 people over the course of 2 to 3 months, where are they going to go? Where are they going to stay? At the time, we had the Marriott downtown coming online. We had some newer hotels getting redeveloped, and we promised them a convention center hotel one way or the other. We knew that the Inner Harbor was going on, and we knew that there was talk of a hotel at the mall. So based off of these types of promises, we were able to secure the business that they were comfortable enough to know that there's going to be people, there's going to be places for the bowlers to sleep. And so it was really good to hear. But that's the type of business that our community has not received over the past few years that we're going to get. We're going to compete with as we grow. And one of the other things that I think, when we're looking at tourism setting goals, we're a sports town. We have a very successful athletic program at Syracuse University. It's really a professional sports program. When you look at our basketball program, the way that this community behaves when things go well and when things don't go well, it's really phenomenal. And I'm probably the worst offender of that. Saying that, we can't compete for a women's hockey Frozen Four. We're thousands of hotel rooms short of the bare minimums to apply for that. And I see Legislator Irving is now here, my colleague, Linda Irving. To really move us regionally forward, we need to understand where our shortcomings are as far as tourism, which is something that we do pretty well, because our room occupancy tax, which is a measure of people staying in our hotels, has actually grown significantly. So we actually do that well, but how can we do that better? And to do that better, we need to be able to go after these different pockets of businesses. You need to understand where your faults are. And I got to learn that a lot when I was down in Dallas, hearing about our strengths and our faults. And we secured that business. That business is coming in 2018. We're very excited about that. That's one piece of tourism, though, right? That's one piece. Our convention business downtown, bringing businesses downtown, conventions business. Other pieces building on our natural resources, which is really what county government has been focused on with the restoration of Onondaga Lake over the last few years. A year and a half ago, the legislature approved a Loop the Lake Trail, which is going to be kicked off in May. From the west side of the lake, I don't know how many people have had the pleasure of actually viewing what the west side of the lake looks like. When you can look over to Liverpool, you can look at the Inner Harbor, but it is phenomenal. It's amazing. It's a sad story in a way that you've had generations of Onondaga County residents that really haven't been able to do that and haven't been able to, really utilize that natural resource. And so in county government, over the last few years, there was a ACJ court case which said you're responsible for cleaning up that lake. We've had a partner in Honeywell that has been very, very good at doing what they're doing. Their dredging of the lake is actually, above scale, pace. They're supposed to finish in 2016. They'll probably be done in 2015. The county executives, Save the Rain program going through and working to capture stormwater that comes in and pollutes the lake has been a tremendous success. And it's kind of what we've done. It's been our story. And it was nice recently in the news when all these things with the stadium were going on and that didn't work out. And we could go into that later if you want to ask questions. But what happened because of that really was fitting for what we do in what we've been doing in county government, our mission with the lake. And we came up with a revitalization strategy pretty quickly to put in front of Governor Cuomo. And the governor he liked it. He wanted to invest in Central New York, and it worked. And it's more than an amphitheater. This is really a sexy thing that will help drive people into our community. It will help showcase the lake. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to compete with SPAC. It's going to compete with, Canandaigua. It's going to compete with Darien Lake. We'll have good acts there. It could be the home for Symphoria, potentially. You could use our other local arts organizations can use it year-round, hopefully. There's a lot of different things that can happen with it, but that's just a small piece. Really what this is about, it's a comeback story for that village in Solvay who saw its natural resources decimated, and then even worse, the employer that did it picked up and left. So you killed the natural resource, you killed the valuable property in that community, and then you get up and you leave, and you take the jobs with you. And the village of Solvay is a really interesting story. It's actually built by Solvay Process, actually built, started the village. So when you go through the housing stock one day, if you just drive through, you can see exactly how they did it. There's mansions, where you had high-level executives building their housing. There's middle management-type housing, right, and really nice housing. Then there's working-class housing, and then there's this odd housing that, maybe it's 2 units, 3 units, 4 units, 5 units, whatever it is. But it's really interesting. If you look at the housing stock, you can tell when you know the history of why it was built that way. And what this plan will do is it's $100 million, and $30 million is going to come from the state of New York. The other $70 million is going to be piecemealed together through numerous resources. The county will take the $2.5 million we're receiving from the gambling compact that was negotiated through New York State. We're in the Oneida Nation region, so we'll get $2.5 million yearly. And what we'll do with that money is we're going to, instead of trying to find, that money's really earmarked for economic development, so instead of trying to find one shots to give money to each year, essentially we're going to use that money to pay for debt service. We're going to go and we're going to bond and we're going to have a real centralized impact, and that's how we'll pay for it is through that $2.5 million. But it's a strategy. It's a facade improvement strategy on Milton Ave. We'll be going through trying to redo facades, work with business owners. It's a brownfield improvement strategy on the other side of Milton Ave, where the old Allied Chemical spots are. There's numerous brownfields, probably 6 of them, that can be redeveloped for real good economic usage. Solvay has public power, which is a huge economic incentive for manufacturing, whether it's high-tech manufacturing or any real business that will locate there that uses energy. So that's really a key component of it. We have a strategy that's been developed similar to what Congressman Walsh's Syracuse Neighborhood Initiative was, where we're going to go in, we're going to use deconstruction, not demolition. We're going to acquire sites that don't make sense anymore to modernize the housing stock. We're going to deconstruct those properties. There will be money for new construction. There will be money for existing homeowners to help improve their properties. There will be money for senior housing to help. There's no real senior housing within the village, yet it's a village with aging population, a very proud village of their history. People want to live there. They have a nice little village center, essentially area where you can, receive numerous services. So we want to try to incent. There's talk of one of the old schools, St. Cecilia, would be a perfect candidate to have, a strong senior housing apartments, that would work well. So it's more of a comeback story about Solvay than it is about an amphitheater. And I think that's been lost in what's been going on, because $70 million of county money was going to go there. One of the other key things that we need to do is we're going to revamp a pump station too. So essentially right now in a lot of the business parks that receive a lot of attention when a company looks at Oneida County are in Radisson, are in the western side of the county, and right now the BOD levels are too high, so we're going to divert those levels to Metro, so that's going to be about a $15 million investment in our infrastructure so that we can continue to grow. But that's kind of a big deal. We've never done this in county government, this type of project, this size. So it's, you know, right now we're working with our state partners, asking them for different, help with design build authority. The state actually on Bridge Street, we're going to try to make it look a lot like East Genesee Street with the connective corridor. So the state has actually given us the permits to go do that. So we're starting to look at some of those, what needs to happen there. We're studying best usages of the brownfields right now. They're studying what needs to be done for the amphitheater to be open by fall of 2015. So it's really, it's moving fast, and we want it to move fast, but a lot of effort's being done because you want to do it right, and you want to be able to show with this type of investment that you can really turn that village around. You can make it work. The state fair across the street obviously is very, it's a little blighted these days. It's funny. We went down to meet with Governor Cuomo on a Friday to pitch this idea. And that Tuesday, remarkably, I want to say it was in January, it was a very warm, maybe 30 degrees. It was sunny. There was no snow. So we actually got a really good shot of the of the fairgrounds, their concert venue. And we took a nice picture and put it in the packet, and it looked like a venue from a third world country. And some member Christensen, we showed the governor this, and we said a picture, and we said, this is New York State's destination concert venue. And the governor was very embarrassed. And every time we go through, we flip back to that page and just remind him of what the current venue looked like. And we offered to take the concerts at the grandstand, and we said, Governor, we'll give you the amphitheater during those weeks. You can do what you want, but use the amphitheater, and we'll see how that plays out. But the governor did say, and in the original plan, we had millions of dollars asking for upgrades to the fair, to the outside, the exterior, the interior, and the governor said, that's not your problem, that's our problem, let us address that next year's budget. So I think that the fairgrounds itself will probably have a facelift in the near future also. So that will help. That will help. It will help with tourism. It will help with the tax base for the county, for the village of Solvay, for the town of Geddes. But I think, when you tie everything back into the way we raise revenues, part of the problem with a lot of things we want to do is the old way of raising revenues, we're not competitive with other regions in the country. We're the highest, and that's property taxes. You can't really enact a sustainability plan of any real magnitude countywide because you're capping the municipality's ability to raise property taxes out in the suburbs. In the city, you have a problem because 50% of your properties are tax exempt. So you see, you're fighting this each which way, because how do you say to somebody you can't grow a certain way when your only revenue to survive is through property taxes? So either way, the property tax model doesn't work. It doesn't work. And because it doesn't work, people are left with their feet. We continue to lose congressional seats in New York State, in Washington. And, we need to become more competitive. So we do everything we can at the county level to lower property taxes. We work with our partners on consolidation efforts where we can. We have a village improvement fund, which funds infrastructure projects in the villages each year. We increased that this past year by $500,000. Villages are small cities. They have the same problems. They're smaller than the city of Syracuse. We've consolidated with the city of Syracuse when it's been easy for the city to consolidate. With the planning, it was easy for them to do it because they had to do it. And if we didn't do it, they would have lost their sustainability department. So those are easy examples of consolidation. With purchasing, same thing, easy thing for the city of Syracuse to do. It was still consolidation, so it was still a good thing. But when it comes to big things that we need to do, and to really talk about the big issues in consolidation, sewers and stuff that are real game changers, we got to have wins before that. And that means that if we want to do that, towns, villages, and the city of Syracuse need to give up some of the territorial control over things that we do the same. And we do it all well, and we do it the same, and that's parks. The Parks Department, it doesn't matter what the mission is, it's the same. Whether it's the county, a village, a town, or a city. We all pride ourselves on them. We understand how important they are to the residential neighborhoods. But it's tough. It's tough for a village or a town or a city to give up control to a degree. And so you look at it, well, we do it all the same. Who's best suited to be able to sustain the quality of the parks countywide? What government? And it's us. It's us. We have the resources. So we should take the lead on this. And I've started this dialogue. Bob Doherty on the council, I've started this dialogue. I've told Bob Doherty, Bob, we're willing to look at this year going into your budget, a pilot program where we'll take over the operation and maintenance of your big four parks, Thorndon Park, Onondaga Park, Burnett Park, which we pretty much already do, and Schiller Park. And Bob was saying, well, geez, Ryan, we got a problem. Our ice rink down at Meacham Field, Meacham Rink might not work. We need help there. And I said, we'll take that too. So we'll do that. We'll see how this works. If the issue is you're scared about suburban legislators making decisions about your pools, keeping pools open and whatnot, you run your programs, right? So city, you run your programs still. You still do that if you're concerned that the suburban legislators don't understand the needs of inner city neighborhoods. I understand. I grew up in the city. I represent a caucus of suburban legislators. I disagree with that notion, but I understand your concern. And that's where it is. So I challenge everyone in this room, if they want, when people want to talk about budget deficits, when they want to talk about innovation, modernization efforts, here's the easiest one to get done. This is an example of the city. Right now we're talking to the town of Geddes about taking over the same thing, maintenance of their park. Their park is literally next door to Onondaga Lake Park, so it's very easy. I think we'll get that done. But we've offered it to other towns and other villages, and that's a dialogue that happens. If we want to be serious about consolidation, it can't just happen when it's good for one of the other municipalities. It's got to be something that makes sense from a regional, countywide standpoint, and where fiscally one government's getting off the hook and the other one's taking on the risk, where that's not the case, where we can finally find economies of scale, where we can eventually bring the cost to the taxpayers down. And so that parks is the first one to go. And I know that sewers, obviously, again, everybody would love to give the county their sewers, but we're not going to take a healthy county that is really subsidizing all the smaller governments and turn it into an unhealthy county by taking on the worst liability overnight. That's not reasonable. It's not responsible on our part. But we're willing to look at that as we get other victories. Because if we can't do easy things where the missions are the same like parks, it's tougher to do the big things. So I would challenge people in this room who pay attention to ask these questions to all their leaders in their own backyards, because we're willing to do it. And the time now to do it, the county executive has said for the city, you can't be more protected now than ever. If you look at the leadership that would really be at the table for this, you have Joni Mahoney, Stephanie Miner, John DeFrancisco, Bill Magnarelli, Ryan McMahon, all in a position to help make this work. We're all former city common counselors. So at no point in the history of this real region will you have the city protected as much going into these consolidations. And it's better to go into these types of consolidation efforts on your own terms than when the fiscal control board's knocking at your door. So I think that's something that, you know, we should look at. And, we all need to be smarter. I think what Syracuse 2020 is doing, studying the different the different roles of government, what they cost, where they cost, where and why do they do that, I think that will put pressure on public officials to move. But that we don't need a group to tell us how to do our job. We should be looking at these things day in and day out. So that's basically a structure of where we are, the county budget, how we raise revenues, some of our economic development issues, consolidation issues. Any questions from people? I can answer pretty much anything on any topic.
That's a big promise. Thank you. Greg Tripoli, first question.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Greg.
First, I want to thank you for your leadership. There's been a tremendous amount of compromise and collegiality and cooperation, and I know that has a lot to do with your leadership. I have a question and then sort of a cautionary comment. The question is about a great historic building that is right down the street from OHA, Carnegie Library.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's some talk about county executive offices perhaps moving in there. As the director of the Historical Association, it's a great historic building. It does need a lot of work. It is something that I would like to see, we would like to see, you know, doesn't happen to it the same thing that sort of happened to the Mizpah.
Right.
It would be difficult to sell because of the configuration. Sometimes those historic preservation people can be difficult when it comes to development. The top floor of that building has no windows. We would welcome, you know, a move like that to make sure that that building stays in good shape. And as you know, the county executive is sort of the face of the county to the rest of the world. It would be a wonderful welcoming, you know, sort of dress for the job. Look for people who come here. So I'd like to know your feelings
sure.
about that and what the potential is. That and the cautionary comment is sort of, I think what's going on with the lake is fantastic. You know, our history of that lake is unlike any other inland waterway that I know of in the United States. And we're right to make, you know, the most that we can of the lake. As you know, one of the primary rules of sustainable development is to maximize the use of existing assets. And there is a lot of money that's going on to the west side of the lake. As you know very well, there are two county-owned heritage facilities on the east side of the lake.
Sure do.
That are in serious need of assistance. And at the request of the county, OHA, as you know, and with your tremendous assistance, which we're very appreciative of, we are doing our best to revitalize one of those on a very, very, very bare-bones budget in an era when it's very difficult to raise money for art and cultural organizations, especially for a facility that is separated from the most popular part of the east side of the park by a highway, and no means to get between one side of the park and the other at this point. So that's the comment, and if you could
sure.
speak to both of those.
Yeah, so the Carnegie Building, it's an asset. We could have sold it, but what you could have sold it for, it didn't make sense. I think it was like $350,000. And so I recommended to the executive, don't sell it. You know, it's just like, why would you ever sell that? If somebody wants to pay $5 million, okay, maybe. But it's just it's a Carnegie Building, right? It's gorgeous. So what we've asked the executive to do is to take a look at where we're paying rent outside of buildings we own, when those leases are up, and what that is costing us per year. Come back to us, show us a plan where we could move those employees back into the Civic Center, and show us what departments would then leave the Civic Center going to the Carnegie Building. If the deal makes sense mathematically, it will happen. I think I at the State of the County address, I don't know if you were there, but I thought it'd be suitable offices for the county legislature. But I don't think the executive agreed with us. But we'll see. It's a business deal. It's just a business deal. If it makes sense, let's do it. If not, we own lots of different assets, and I think the executive, you know, can show us how they can make it work. But that's kind of where it is. I'm sure over the next 60 days we'll probably get taken up. And I do recognize everything you've done on the east side of the lake with the Haudenosaunee Museum, the different events you've had there in the collaboration with the Onondaga Nation. It's tremendous. So we do recognize everything you're doing on the east side of the lake.
Good morning.
Yeah.
My question goes to two different areas that usually become difficult ones in the budget. One goes to pensions, et cetera, and the second is to health care costs. And particularly as it regards the pension, I know that over the last 5 years, because of the market, the cost to municipalities and the county dramatically went up.
Right.
It would seem to me that has dramatically changed also. And I know there's a five-year averaging thing or whatever involved, but wouldn't that start changing so
yes.
that your cost should be a lot less? And I guess I'm really looking for your perspective on those two issues as how you see the county addressing both them going forward.
Yeah, I think, you're right. We have heard a lot very publicly and very strongly from leadership within the community about pension costs in the state of New York's, you know, one of the mandates. I think the state with the Tier 6, really put us more on a sustainable path. Pension costs are going to go down. The market's rebounded. Like you said, it's a five-year average, so the rate it comes down each year is not fast enough. But we anticipate this year in our 2014 budget that the cost to be coming down a little bit, and then in 2015 to come down more. That still is a huge growth from 10 years ago. But it's starting to come into a factor where you don't need to factor in necessarily increases into your budget anymore. With just like Medicaid, look at the state puts that Medicaid bill on us. We have to do the program, yet we you know, they don't give us enough money to pay for it. So it's, you know, but the cap on that has really helped us fiscally. So I think municipalities will receive pension relief over the next 5 years. The question is, do the municipalities become too big too fast when times are good to be able to ride out the storm as their structured costs start to lower?
Thank you. I wonder if you could address a question you kind of touched on. You talked about the fact that we're trying to do economic development. We may or may not get increased population. Right now, we're not getting increased population, right, and yet we still have efforts to try to create developments outside of the already developed area. You talked about sewers, talked about other infrastructure. Can you talk a little bit about the county legislature's perspective on developing outside the current developed area?
Yeah, I think we, you know, most of the initial cost to new development outside of the sewer shed is borne by the developer, right? So the initial cost isn't really there. It's the long-term costs that come with replacing infrastructure that can catch up with you. I think the real crux of the issue is people are going to live where their kids can go to school and get educated, where they feel safe, and where they enjoy the quality of life. And this is America. We can't tell people where they have to live. So I think it's the municipality's job, the region's job, to try to, where you have pockets of problems in your community, to address those. And so I think I don't think people like driving. People, just look at the 81 debate. I mean, people are going nuts about the idea of, you know, driving an extra 15, 20 minutes to work. I don't think they intentionally like to continue to sprawl. But again, sprawl is a problem because of the way we collect revenues too. If we weren't on property tax base, these municipalities wouldn't be trying to grow consistently either. So our position is, you can't tell people where to live. If the county executive wants to look at our sustainability plan, look at implementing certain pieces of it, we will. But as a whole, as a policy, we're not going to adopt it at this point. And I think the issue is we need to really have an honest debate about what the problems are in our core, and not just the city, our core towns around it, and, you know, look to address those problems. And I think we're having success to a degree, but until people can send their 5-year-old or 6-year-old to a city school and they don't have 30 other kids in the classroom, you're going to have a problem. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And that's, you know, I'll tell you, one of the biggest, when I was a district counselor on the county council, Elmwood School, which is the Elmwood neighborhood, neighbors the Valley and Strathmore. And Elmwood School is probably the only true neighborhood school in the city of Syracuse. And kids that walk to school live there, and they love it, proud community. And the school district tried to shut it down for 2 straight years. And at the council, we stopped it. And then the year I left, they shut it down. Now what's happened is the surrounding schools, both Roberts, probably one of the better schools in the city, and Danforth, their class, one of the least performing schools in the city, their classroom sizes, at a time when teachers are being expected to do so much more, went from 24, 25 kids to 29 to 30. You're going to lose good residents doing that. You can't make those types of decisions made by the school board have huge consequences, and they're having them right now. So until you address issues like that, how are you going to tell somebody that you can't go live over here or over there? I just don't think you can.
I just have a quick question. Greg alluded to the two museums. Is the other one the Salt Museum? Does that still exist? When I was a child, we all went there all the time, and you never see anything about the Salt Museum.
Greg, is that what you were alluding to? Yeah,
yes.
Salt Museum.
Thank you. I'm very comfortable with your leadership and your reasonable approach to solving problems. There is an issue. It may sound frivolous on the surface, but I think it underlies a more serious problem for developers in our area. In the spring, I heard that Costco was going to come to Camillus. Mm-hmm. And it was an exciting thing, a new store coming to the area, to Camillus. And it was supposed to open in the fall or in the winter of last year. And I've heard nothing about it,
sure,
except a local resident said they seem to be stalled in the parking lot. Is there anything that can be done to facilitate the proper time,
yes,
and scheduling of these developments so that developers want to come here? Because I think it was a wonderful site that they thought that the market here could withstand a Costco. And so,
yeah, and as some member, that's a very good example of, you know, a strong I mean, I didn't even understand what Costco really was when they came to us. But I guess people come, so the numbers are great. So where that is essentially, that's going to get done at the end of the spring. The construction will start. Right now, the Aqua Department is reviewing the plan, doing the engineering work so they can start to build the pipes. What was unique about this is that this project actually had needed a bunch of public infrastructure improvements that were actually being paid through bonds through the IDA. So it was kind of unique where those public infrastructure improvements needed to be taken care of before they can start. But that project is moving forward. So in the spring, that will start.
You mentioned before in your talk on the sales tax distribution, mm-hmm. that a number of county legislators voted against their self-interest. Mm-hmm. And I understand what you meant by that, because the vote may have affected their electability. Mm-hmm. But in fact, I guess you could look at it the other way, in that they were voting for their interests if they believe that a strong city a strong city is part of a strong county. So given that, a question that I've often pondered is, do you think there would be any difference in the functioning or the representation with of all county residents if the legislature had at-large members, yeah, as the mm-hmm. council does,
sure,
as opposed to just district?
Yeah, I agree with you. And we're actually looking at that. I would argue, Sandy, that it is against their interest because they're elected to represent districts that are suburban. Right, so it's not their job to look at things from a metropolitan standpoint.
We can argue about that.
But you're right, and I think part of what, and we received a little bit of criticism for this, but when the lines were redrawn, the legislature has a role in it, the executive has a role in it, the commissioners, election commissioners, and part of what the executive's goal was is to have metropolitan districts. So you went from having the old days where you'd have the city would carve up districts inside the city, and that would be that. And then you'd have the suburbs carving up districts in the suburbs, and that would be that. And so you actually have 9 districts now that have suburban and urban representation. So to a degree, it's changed a lot. And I think that's why over the last 3 years, you've seen a lot more collaboration at the legislature. Meetings go a lot quicker. There's not hours and hours of grandstanding over nothing. But I think to really go to a metropolitan government where you probably have a very minimized city role, very minimized town role, village role, and a strong metropolitan form of government, you would need countywide representatives. There's no question.
Thanks. And would that take, you said you're studying it, that would take
referendum? How we could do it, you could do it, we would probably put it up for a referendum, and then you'd probably do redistricting right after. We've looked at doing this, in 2 years, depending on, the political will of the legislature, but it's something that I believe in. I don't think we're going to be able to compete with Sunbelt regions who at the state levels have much more business friendly climates than we do if we don't, really start to bring down the cost of living here. Mm-hmm. And one way of doing that is saying to everybody, there's these countywide representatives at the legislature that represent everybody, mm-hmm. not just this interest or that interest, they represent everybody. So it helps you because in a district, if you take a bad vote, you could lose your job by 300 or 400 people, getting angry with you. Whereas if you take a controversial vote from a countywide perspective, one end of the region or the county may not be happy, but the other one may be. So it balances it out. So it makes the politics a lot easier also.
Okay, thank you.
I'm a resident of Onondaga County for the last 60 years. I'm also a resident of the city for the last 60 yep. years. I think that ties into your comments that you were just making and to Sandra's comments.
Yep.
But I'd like to make a suggestion on saving money.
Sure.
It has been recommended by the sheriff that there be another building built, mm-hmm. a 6- or 7-story building,
yeah.
another jail. And I'd like to suggest that we not build it. Yeah. If you build it, you will fill it.
That's right.
If you don't build it, you won't fill it.
Right.
We're not in the hotel. We are not in the hotel business of taking people who have been arrested but not found guilty and going into the jail. If you have it, you are just going to find people who are – and who stays in the jail? Not the people like you or I, but rather the people that can't afford $500 bail, even though we do have jail ministry.
Yep.
So what is your stand on building another holding tank for people who have not been found guilty?
Well, John, if you follow the media well, you'll know that Kevin Walsh and I don't agree on much. Actually, I'm pretty sure he's probably got somebody tailing me right after this event waiting for me to run that stop sign. I think one way you can save money is if the sheriff lived within his budget too, right? So if he didn't pierce his overtime year in and year out and just come up with ridiculous reasons why or why not. But I agree with you. I think the number one social program for anybody that will be effective is a job. And when people go into jail, you have to keep in mind many are guilty, but some are innocent. And you also need to keep in mind what happens in there can damage their you know, their mental health and their psyche for the rest of their lives. So I would say this, that fourth tower was on a fast track until about 4 months ago when we were looking at ways where we could fiscally keep people out of jail when they aren't there for the violent offenses and whatnot. And we're not going to fast track anything this legislative session. A new sheriff will be elected in the fall, and we'll want the new sheriff to have numerous options. We don't want to lock in this option for the new sheriff. So one of the things that I've been working on, and Legislator Irvin's been very helpful with this, is a jail oversight committee. We're getting very close to that. That's something that's not going to make the sheriff happy with me again. But I've been down that path a couple times, and I'm still here. So we'll continue to advocate where we think it's right.
Great. Excellent.
Hi. I congratulate you. It's a great presentation you gave us this morning, kind of inspirational. I also want to congratulate Jack. I think he's been a splendid member of the audience.
He has it. Usually he pulls me off by now, and he's looking for a treat, so he's been pretty
credit
good.
Credit to your parenting.
my wife's.
I've heard a case made here for countywide, kind of a regional perspective that I hadn't quite heard put together before, and I found it quite inspiring, this idea that tourism will be the engine for our future. And that's the engine for our future welfare as a county, not as individual towns and villages in a city. And you also mentioned how it was sort of almost suicidal for suburban or rural legislators to vote for that new sales tax formula. And I'm wondering, with the possibility of the improvement of fortunes of Solvay, the town of Solvay and village, and other benefits to other regions, perhaps Camillus, that doesn't strengthen the case in some ways. That, I mean, a new Costco in Camillus isn't going to help Fayetteville or isn't going to help, you know, Janesville. But whether you see a day arriving, I mean, you're making this case every day, I presume, where that kind of perspective, and even notwithstanding this great idea of at-large legislators, that might not be a suicidal decision in the future.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the part of sustainability that I think the legislature can agree with is, you know, building off our existing assets. I think it's just to the point, it's tough to tell somebody where to live. And so I think that's part of the perception people get is, like you're saying, you can't build here. What if people want to live there? But I think you're right. The more and more we have innovative type projects that happen or innovative solutions and consolidation that happen and people can see that they work, the guard comes down and you can do bigger things. And as hard as it is to putting together this project on the lake, the western side of the lake, and the village, most of the money being centered in the village of Solvay, which coincidentally I represent the village of Solvay, but that's what my caucus members and members of the legislature, I'm sure, thought too, is here's Ryan going out and bringing home a lot of money to his district. But I think the case is easily made that that's where the money belongs if we're going to start now that there's a talk of a vision for a lake, and now that people are talking about what they want, public access, public use, now the first municipality that's been damaged the most by what's happened in the lakes at Solvay. So I think, Fred, as this starts to succeed and we can get hopefully some real consolidation issues under our belt that makes sense for everybody, I think you can really start looking at the metropolitan point of view, which makes some of these other debates so much easier to have because the property tax versus sales tax debate going on right now with the Destiny Hotel, things like this, if we start looking at things regionally, and metropolitan-wise, some of these debates aren't as contentious.
I just wanted to give you my interpretation of the sustainability plan is not that you would tell people where they that they can't live there, because you've said that a couple of times. You can't tell people that they can't live there, but that you could say that the county would not fund
approve
the
putting
infrastructure.
Pipes in. Yeah. Same thing, though, Sandy.
You know,
same thing, though.
Which is different than as opposed to Solvay, which is an example.
You already have the existing
infrastructure.
Yes.
Sustainable.
Yeah. So Solvay is a great example of how sustainability can work.
Right.
Whereas if you're the supervisor in the town of Elbridge, though, they're going to look at it. And that's the perspective that we'll look at it for, right? Because they're the minority, if you look at it, right? And you always need to fight for the rights of the minority. The minority in this case are the people who are on the periphery of the county who are being told that they can't grow anymore. But the only way they can survive is through property taxes
right.
And their costs continue to go up.
Right.
So that's the crux of the debate from our standpoint. Right. We can agree on 80% of the plan. That's easy, right? But it's fighting, you know, it's that type of situation. And whereas if nobody wanted to live in the town of Elbridge or another suburban area, then you wouldn't need the town. Then we wouldn't be having the issue. So I think that's the crux of the issue is we can agree on much of what the county executive has proposed. And if she wants to approach it with a piecemeal approach, I think she'll be very happy with what the response is from the legislature. But the idea that we're going to say no to building pipes until we change either the way we fund governments completely or we address the issues in the core that why people are moving out, I think that's tough. I think it's really tough.
So that's really the issue between a community plan or a sustainability plan and, let's say, a financial plan and a business plan, which is something else or should be incorporated, but it's broader. So let me just ask you this in terms of the feasibility study. Or any feasibility study that you would do about a new development, but let's say for a hotel next to a major mall.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to talk about a cost-benefit analysis that looks at tax revenue, potential sales tax revenue, versus the costs of, you know, of public services and lost property tax revenue. Is that going to be it, or is there another element to that feasibility study that looks at effects at, say, a Hotel Syracuse or a convention center hotel or, you know, infrastructure or anything like that?
Yeah, I think you've taken everything, right? I think this is important that I'm glad you brought this up. We're in the hotel business in county government. We do room occupancy tax. So we – $6 million of room occupancy tax last year was collected. 100% of it went into the city of Syracuse, either to fund our convention center, our arts, which are all located in the city of center, our CVB. So we drive downtown, and that's done through that. Okay. Traditionally, hotels in the county have not received pilot agreements. Most of those hotels in the county are not built on brownfields or in vacant buildings. That's why they haven't. They're built on land that is very marketable, very attractive. The hotels in the city of Syracuse that have been built, which I voted for the pilot agreement for the Marriott Hotel, was an extraordinarily rich pilot, but it was groundbreaking. It was a big deal. We needed the rooms, A. B, created some density. But the argument for it, Sandy, and you can check the notes, that's why we got to be consistent throughout this whole debate, was we're trading property tax for sales tax for the Marriott Hotel. That was the argument. And that's the reality of it. So now we're talking about a Hotel Syracuse, which a lot of people in this room have put a lot of effort into getting done. What we're doing here, and I'm going to tell you all the benefits this is receiving before we go to this next hotel. I'd like to research this, and I almost Googled it this morning because I wanted to be factual, but probably the only situation that I've heard of in my 10 years in government where a municipality is taking a hotel through eminent domain. I understand why we've gotten to this point. We have false starts and cancellations, but it's groundbreaking, and nobody's talking about this. But for another developer who was talking about eminent domain before, people are going nuts. Then we're not RFPing the process. We aren't going out to people who would love a chance. If you're giving them the hotel to develop it, the IDA, SIDA, signed a preferred development agreement. What does the word preferred mean? Okay? So one person, no RFP, no competition. Then this developer, who's very good guy, by the way, is asking for $15 million of cash, okay? Then this developer says, I can't do the deal unless I get my New York State tax credits and my federal tax credits, which basically he takes out a loan. Those tax credits underwrite his loan. Then there's a $2 to $5 million gap of cash. He's asking the state of New York and or the county to come up with that $2 to $5 million cash. Then on top of that, they want the Pilot Marriott hotel deal. We just, as the taxpayers, paid for the Hotel Syracuse if it all works out. Okay? So that's that deal. I'm fine with it. But what I'm not fine with is the situation where we're picking winners and losers in that space. So we're picking a clear winner here, and I get it. It's vacant. We need it for the Convention Center District. But, oh, and on top of that, I forgot the biggest one of all, they want us to designate it the Convention Center Hotel and guarantee them room nights with a room block agreement. So now, let alone we're paying for the building, but now to make it work, we're guaranteeing you your marketplace. So this debate's getting a little tough now when we're picking winners and losers, and we are as a community right now. That's okay, because we've done it in the past. But this new proposed hotel, the math isn't as compelling to make as the Destiny expansion, right? It's a hotel, your sales tax you're getting, whatnot, you're getting new revenues that you wouldn't have if nothing's built. It's a brownfield. I saw a picture the other day with the original mall, and next across the street from the original mall were a bunch of oil tanks. People forget that. The developer's never done himself any favors. He's controversial. He's a shrewd businessman. I think that's this is an emotional topic. What I'm trying to do is get the emotion out of it. We brought in an attorney from outside the community that's never been on the guy's side or against the guy. He's never been with them, and he's never sued him. So if I want that criteria, for that criteria, all the law firms in this community were discounted. So we brought them in. Then they gave us a feasibility study, which their numbers actually I thought were a little conservative. But we said, no. Let's go get our own feasibility study where we're also going to bring into consideration Ed Riley at the Hotel Syracuse. Ed, what's your business plan? What do you need to succeed? Because even though I disagree with all the benefits you're getting, but you're still getting public benefits, so we have to protect those benefits. We need to look at our SMG, who manages our convention center. You have to tell us how much meeting space they can build that won't compete, because if they wanted to put a big ballroom and if they wanted to put lots of meeting space, they would put out our Hotel Syracuse and our convention center in one shot. Then we want to talk to some of the other locals that have public investment. What's your business model? How does this work? So that's what the feasibility study is going to entail. What Ed Riley will tell you is the Hotel Syracuse will not be impacted if they don't build a ballroom. What the Inner Harbor Hotel year will tell you, which is a small 100-room Starwood, as long as they're doing something unique like an Embassy Suite, something like that, it's not going to impact us. After all that's done, you need to get back to the business deal and what's the cash you're getting. It's tough to say you'd get the property taxes, right, because you're not getting them if it's still a pile of dirt. So that's a pretty tough argument. But what you're really talking about is if they wanted the Marriott Pilot, you're talking about $16 million over 18 years of tax benefits. You're talking about $3 million of sales tax exemptions. So that's what you're talking about. So then you look at, can you make it – does the new revenue offset this? And if it's close, that really isn't that's really not that great. You get some jobs. And then your answer can either be no, which is pretty easy to say. It's easy to say to Bob Congell. I could say no right away, and my poll numbers would go up 20%. Or you can do what's right, and you can say, how can we make this work for everybody? And maybe the answer is you can't. Maybe that's the answer. But I'm willing to, if the feasibility comes back and says, it's close, how can we push this deal in the favor of the community at large? Because remember, I was in Arlington, Texas, and the Bowlers have already told me we don't have enough hotel rooms. So to compete, and I know we can't get a Frozen Four, Women's College Hockey Final Four, and I know we can't get all this other business because we don't have enough hotel rooms. So I don't want to be in the business of picking winners and losers. I want to be in the business of picking winners for the community, and I think all those hotels can be at the right deal.
Thank you. It's a very important issue, and I hope we all feel a lot more comfortable now, having heard your explanation. I appreciate it very much. Ryan McMahon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you
for being with us, Jack.